All right, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. Today we are broadcasting from the third floor of New Creation Tower. It is a beautiful fall day in St. Louis, and it sort of doesn't get any better than this, although I could use a few more mountains. Visible mountains would be nice. Mount Rainier or Mount Hood or maybe one of those things. Mount Rushmore would be fine, indeed. And we are reading the letter to the Hebrews, very interesting book, and Greek that is more challenging than normal to us New Testamentlers. And we are in chapter 9, and we're picking up at verse 11, after the paragraph in which the writer, who of course is anonymous to us, we don't know who he is, and none of the guesses that I've ever seen are even come close to being convincing. The writer has talked about the first tabernacle and its appointments and so forth, and how the chief priests enter in regularly, although the high priest, verse 7, only enters once a year to offer the blood at the mercy seat. And so he's setting this up to show that these gifts couldn't finally or fully cleanse from sin. And so he's working a very serious typology here. And, of course, like all the other New Testament writers, the writer to the Hebrews understands that the Old Testament prophecy and institution and history is all proleptic. Well, not proleptic. I guess it's prophetic, looking forward to the coming of Christ. And that's verse 11. Where we have really, it might seem obvious to us, but it's not. We have the subject of the verb, which is five lines away, fronted for emphasis. So we'll the last statement that he makes here in verse 10 had to do with the fact that only for foods and drinks and various washings that were the decrees of the flesh, until the decrees appointed for the flesh until the time of restoration. And now verse 11 proclaims the time of restoration, if we could say it that way, namely with Christ. And so verse 11 reads something, let's see, maybe we'll get 11 and 12 together just because it'll make better sense that way. So we have Christos de para genomenos archieus ton genomenon agathon. Now, in your mind, put a big comma there. It's debated, but I think maybe we'll put a big comma there. And then we have a bunch of dia plus the genitive stuff. Diates meidzanas kai teleoteras skenes ou cheropoietu tout estin ou tautes tes ktisos ou de haimatas tragon kai muskon dia de tu idiu haimatas. Here's the verb, ace eothen, f hapax ace tahagia, ionion litrosen heuramenos. And so that whole 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines has a main verb, and it's ace eothen, he entered. And the subject of that is Christos at the very beginning. So you can see how widely separated the subject and the verb are. And so Christos is there. For some emphasis at the beginning, but Christ. And now let's talk about Christ. Paragenomenos is from paragenomi, which means to be present or appear. Genomai, excuse me. And it's an aorist participle, deponent, middle deponent. And so normally means appear or happened or something like that. We'll take it causally here. But Christ, because he appeared or has come, even something like that, as high priest of the happening good things, literally. Okay. Now, it's an interesting variant reading. If you keep your index finger at genomenon, and you can see the dog leg right, and then you go down to verse 11 in the manuscript evidence down below, and you see melantone. This is from mello, which means to about, for something to about to be, or, you know, to about to happen. And a lot of manuscripts, in fact, the vast majority, and Eusebius and some others, as you can see, think this makes better sense, that a chief priest, because he has become the chief priest of the about-to-happen good things. See, that gives it more of a historical, salvation historical, sequential kind of a feel. Now, the editors of the critical edition, maybe for that reason, think that menon is the superior reading, maybe just because it doesn't make quite as much sense. I might have actually expected, I thought about this, oddly enough, a future participle of genomai, which you don't see very much in the New Testament. But that you could actually translate as Christ, because he has become chief priest of the things, of the good things which were going to be. But however we resolve this, if we just keep the reading with the aorist participle, chief priest of the good things which have happened, perhaps, since the Christ event has taken place. Now, again, you've got a lot of dia plus the genitive going on here, and I'm following the lead now of Henry Alford in his commentary on Hebrews. He suggested that you put a big comma after agathon. So that completes the thought. Christ, because he has become chief priest of the good things that have happened, and now let's talk about how he entered. And so we've got through, dia plus the genitive, through the greater and more perfect tent or tabernacle. Maidzonos is the genitive singular of maidzone. The feminine and masculine forms are the same. And teleos, as you know, means mature or perfect. And this is the comparative of teleos. It would be telea teras if it were masculine. Here it's tera because it's feminine, because skene is feminine, right? So through the greater and more perfect tent, let's further describe it, not keropaietu, you can guess what that means, not handmade, right, not made with hands, parenthetical comment, this is not of this creation. And we have to say something like, of this, we have to understand this fallen creation or something like that. Now we'll continue this thought, not even through the blood of he-goats and calves. I looked this up, actually. A moskos is a shoot, literally, like a little a sucker, you know, that comes out of the base of a plant. And it comes to mean a young animal that has kind of sprung up. And so that's how we get calf from moskos. That was interesting to me. I didn't know that. And a tragos is a he-goat, right? Through the blood of goats and calves, so not even through the blood of goats and calves. Now put dia on the other side, put da on the other side of dia, but through his own blood, he entered ephapax, once or once for all, into the holy things, or normally taken as holy place, eternal redemption, having found for himself. This is an odd form. It's a variant spelling, heuramenos. It's an aorist participle middle. Now, because it's a strong aorist, if your morphological hat is on tightly, which mine happens to be because I'm teaching elementary Greek right now, I wouldn't expect the alpha there. I'd expect the omicron. Hilramenos, not hilramenos. But it's just an alternate spelling. And so this, again, is an aorist participle from heurisko. And in the middle voice, it can come to have the sense of to find for oneself, that is, obtain. The lexicon, the BDAG, says this is the only place in the New Testament where that meaning, which is found elsewhere in Greek literature, occurs, only here in Hebrews 9:12. So having obtained eternal redemption. And now we still have to put together that participle, heoramenos, and the main verb. He entered obtaining. Here's a good example of how the rule of thumb for the relative time of the participle probably does not apply. Okay, it's an aorist participle, and the rule of thumb would make the participle action prior to the main verb. That doesn't make any sense theologically. First, he obtained eternal redemption, and then he entered into the holy place? No. It was in entering the holy place and offering his own blood as a sacrifice that he did it. So the participle and the main verb sort of theologically have to be at the same time. And this happens, again, it happens not infrequently. So it's always good to remember that the rule of thumb for the relative time of the participle is only that. It's a rule of thumb, and it doesn't always hold. And, of course, it's just a contextual decision.
Now, is that a rule of thumb because that's the way it's supposed to be most of the time, or is it just, you know, that someone came up with that and just said, oh, let's do it like this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a rule of thumb because it just works out that way a lot of the times. Yeah. And I remember talking to Dr. Vels one time about this, and what he suggested in using his categories of the present stem as a focus on connection and the aorist stem as a focus on action, that if you've got some kind of a special connection going on with a present stem participle, it might more tightly bind it to the main verb. Okay, and if it's more tightly bound to the main verb, then it might happen fairly often to be at the same time as the main verb. See? Whereas the aorist participle is just a simple focus on action, then it might more readily lend itself to being a separate time that is one step further in the past. Yeah, but the rule of the relative time of the participle is the kind of thing that you teach desperate elementary Greek students, you know, so that they have some hope of dealing with participles, right? Well, yeah, in a sense. Although it's interesting, I don't know if any of you guys have, Charles Mole has this grammar called An Idiom Book of the New Testament, I think it's what it's called. Anyway, he has this great citation on this very rule of the relative time. He says, it's a schoolboy's rule that works more often than it should. So again, it's kind of a rough and ready thing that actually is very handy. So don't discard it just on the basis of the writer to the Hebrews, but as always, it is a contextual decision. Now, what exactly is he talking about? I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm drowning here in Hebrews. Like, what's the tabernacle not made with hands, which is not of this creation? What is that? See, and what does it mean to enter through his own blood? It can't mean, at least I don't think it can't mean location through, like by going through his own blood. That sort of conceptually doesn't make any sense to me. So it must mean that the means by which Christ entered was his own blood. Well, where was that? Was it on the cross? Is this somehow linked to the ascension? So that the thought is that even though he's raised from the dead, if Christ is the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, he bears his own blood into the presence of God and there makes propitiation for sins. I'm not exactly sure what the thought is, to be honest. And I'm very happy this is Greek Club and not a seminar on Hebrews. Okay, which, by the way, is being offered by Dale Meyer next term. I don't know if any of you guys signed up for it. I mean, that would be a really, because as you know, our president has his PhD in the classics from Wash U. Yeah. And so if there was ever a guy who could make sense of the Greek of Hebrews, it would be he, I would think. So anyway, but we've made tolerable sense, I think, out of that long sentence, verses 11 and 12. Other questions? Anything? Okay, we'll keep moving forward then. Verse 13. And 13 and 14 is a long sentence as well, although I think we can stop one verse at a time and we'll get the if clause of verse 13 and then the then clause in verse 14. So verse 13 might sound something like, Agar tahaima tragon kai tauron kai spadas damalaos hrantidzuza tus kekoinomenus hagiadze prostentes sarkas katharateta, comma, dot, dot, dot. So now we have just, what would you call this, a present particular conditional sentence. We have a, and then a present indicative, hagiadze, there's the verb. And then in the second clause in verse 14, we have tahaima, the blood, katharie, will cleanse. And so it's a pretty simple, although lengthy, conditional sentence. So verse 13, for if the blood of he-goats and bulls, and, now I had to look this up, spadus, anybody know by any chance? I've never seen it before. It means ashes, okay? And the ashes of a, as they would say in Texas, heifer. I had to look up damaleos. A damalis is a heifer. So it's a she calf? Did I just make that up? Is a calf a boy or a girl? Does it matter? Anyway, it means heifer. And hrontidzo, that one I knew. I don't know, does anybody know what hrontidzo means? Yeah, it means sprinkle, right? And it's a present participle, active, feminine singular nominative, and its referent is spadas, ashes. Ashes is actually a feminine noun. It's hey spadas. In that sense, it's like hey hadas. Looks like a masculine second declension, but it's a feminine second declension noun. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer, which sprinkles those who have participated or who have been, let's see, kekoinomenus is from koinao. It's a perfect participle. Could be middle, could be passive, right? Those who have what? I think we have to take it as middle, don't we? Kekoin, what would it mean, passive? Those who have been participated? Yeah, I think it must be a middle force who participate for themselves. Exactly.
Is that a participate or is it more like defile or profane?
Oh, you're right. I was thinking, let's see, koinao. You're right. I think we have to take it with the common meaning. They've commonized themselves. Okay, very nice. I just looked at it and thought of koinonia. And I hurried over it too fast. So you're right. Now it makes sense. Good. Thank you, Will. Yeah, so this is the verb which can mean not to participate, but to defile or make common. Oh, that makes perfect sense. Now it is passive. Those who have been and are defiled. Okay. Good. See, Greek Club is a manifestation of our life together, right? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, well, thank you very much. Now it makes sense. So the ashes sprinkling those who have been defiled. If the blood and the ashes sanctifies. Now pros plus the accusative, as you know, can express purpose, right? So for the purpose of cleansing of the flesh. See, and again, the writer to the Hebrews is not willing to admit or to say that in some ultimate sense, the Old Testament sacrifices really cleansed anything. See? And we have to be careful in how we articulate that as well in terms of biblical theology. But I think we could agree in saying when they did cleanse, as the text of Leviticus says they will, it was only in light of the greater tabernacle, the greater sacrifice which was yet to come. So if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of a heifer which sprinkles those who have been defiled sanctifies for the cleansing of the flesh, if that happens, now the other shoe drops in verse 14. So, okay? Good. Questions about that? Any other mistakes I made? It's always good to learn, right? Okay, verse 14. Paso malon, by so much rather. That's a little awkward, but that's how it might be translated. By so much rather, tahaima tu Christu, has dia pneumatis ioneu, he auton pras enenken, amomon to theou, katharie tain synedesin hemon, apa nekron ergon eista la treuen theozonte. By much rather, so again, notice that it's an argument always with the writer to the Hebrews from the lesser to the greater, from the earlier to the later, right? From the shadow to the substance, if you could say it that way. By much rather, the blood of Christ, who, and notice that Huss has Christ, not blood, as its antecedent, because it's masculine, right? Who, through the eternal Spirit, himself offered as amomas, undefiled to God, katharie. This is from katharizo, and it's actually an irregular future. It's not. You might expect it to go from katharizo to katharisso, and it may actually do that now that I think about it. But this is the form, I think, that you also see in the New Testament, probably in other literature as well. Will cleanse. So future indicative active third singular. Will cleanse the conscience of us from dead works. Ace, now ace ta plus the infinitive. In order to what? Present infinitive. Begin to serve, continue to serve. And latreuo takes a dative case direct object. So in order to continue to serve the living God. And zonta is just the participle of za'o, right? So let's go back and we'll get that whole if-then sentence 13 and 14 together. For if the blood of goats and bulls and the ashes of heifer which sprinkle those who have been defiled sanctifies for the cleansing of the flesh, by much rather the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself as blameless to God, will cleanse our conscience from dead works in order to serve the living God. Right? See, this is what makes Hebrews so challenging to teach to at least 21st century North Americans, is that the writer to the Hebrews is assuming everywhere that his readers believe that you need a sacrifice to cleanse you. Right, right, right. So Americans, of course, aren't entirely clear that they're dirty at all and that they need to be cleansed. And the whole idea of a vicarious animal sacrifice is bizarre to our experience. But that, you know, that's what he's leaning on that. That's his springboard, you know, for saying, look, the sacrifice of Christ. So in order to teach Hebrews well, I think you actually have to just flat teach some Old Testament theology. And invite people to adopt biblical categories. Now, if you're a well-catechized Christian, you know these things, but I certainly wouldn't start out a new class of Christians by teaching Hebrews. You know, I mean, the categories are just so foreign to us. Now, if you were teaching in Asia or in Central America or some other place in the world where they actually are familiar with religions whereby animal sacrifice cleanses you, right? Well, you traveled the world this last summer. You probably were in places like that. See, at that point now, it's very good news.
Human sacrifice.
Human sacrifice, yeah, right. So, okay, well, that gets us through verse 14. And now we get into this interesting passage where the meaning of, at least it's argued, that the meaning of diatheke actually shifts for a few verses from covenant to testament. Because the writer talks about the death of the one who establishes the testament. So we'll have to pick that up next week at verse 15. So, all right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually see the... Dr. Gibbs, could you say that not only is the anonymous writer writing to the Jews, but he's also...